Well, that's hard to follow. Thanks, Eric. So our reading this morning is called Possibilities for Our Children's Lives. It was written by Evan Carville Zimmer. Dear Moppies, Maddies, and Babas, men who have given birth, women whose children still call you daddy, queer parents of all genders and none, there isn't a holiday set apart for us. We're reminded of that twice a year. But I see you. I see you next to your wife's hospital bed, snuggling your newborn skin to skin against your top surgery scarred chest while the nurses avert their eyes and try not to ask questions. I see you grieving the children you helped dream into this world and lost when your ex decided biology trumps the hours you spent raising them and the deep love for the children not of your DNA. I see you just feeding your baby while glaring at people wishing you a happy Mother's Day. I see you who have lost custody because a court agreed that it was less confusing for your children for you to disappear from their lives than for them to see you as you really are. And I see you trying to survive, not fully transitioning so you can see your children. I see you radicalizing your PTA, taking down donuts with Dad's Day, confusing strangers by calling your infant they until they're old enough to declare their own gender, raising children who ask strangers what their pronoun is. There's no day with the newspaper circulars advertising the stuff our children should buy us. Would we choose, the perfume, flowers, pedicure day, or the tools, fishing, gear, golf club day? Or neither? Maybe ditch the consumerism entirely? Or would the rituals be our day? There's the breakfast ritual, whatever works for your family, and I suppose we paint everyone's nails because nail polish is for everyone. And the Maddie Baba of the day can choose, is this a relaxing kind of a day or a get something done work kind of a day? Sometimes there's a lingering special project and if that could just be done today. So maybe this is a day for the next level of tool use instruction and everyone gets to use power tools as long as they tie their hair back. Maybe we watch Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and weep when Mitzi meets his child, and blow kisses to the photographs on the wall, or if your kids are watching with us, we'll fast forward through the parts they're not really ready for, and tell them stories of the people who first showed us how fabulous gender can be. Then there should be some kind of a dance party before the kids go to bed, with full use of the costume bin, because drag queens like Mitzi inspire that kind of thing. And bedtime will be like every night. We read our favorite books and change the default he to they. We will sing them lullabies like Everything Possible by Fred Small so they know how wide open the possibilities for their lives are. And then, at our house anyway, we'd sit in the living room retelling stories about the heartbreak and hilarity of parenting. The options are endless. While we may not fit in the dominant mold, neither has capitalism constrained our day. The world might not see us, but we can see each other and celebrate the love and devotion we have for our children. We celebrate the gifts we give the world by being ourselves so that all children might know how wide open the possibilities for their lives really are. Here ends the reading. This is one of those services where I'm not sure there's much more I could say that would really add a lot to what other people have already said, the words of the wonderful music that you've heard, and of course, Anthony James is amazing. And but I feel compelled to try to add something to the conversation this morning. So I guess I'll start from where I am. The 50s and 60s were a particularly regressive time for the LGBT people in the United States. Gay bars were being raided on a routine basis by police. People lived in fear of being arrested, outed, and beaten. And on June 28, 1969, the LGBT community decided it wasn't going to take it anymore and rioted after a raid at the Stonewall Inn, a gay bar in New York City. The first Gay Pride March was held to commemorate the Stonewall riots on June 28, 1970, and the Gay Pride movement was born in the United States. I didn't come out until the mid-80s, but I remember what a powerful experience it was to attend Gay Pride marches in Boston, and that somebody, please pinch me, I can't quite believe this is actually happening feeling of celebrating Gay Pride in a church of all places. At Arlington Street Church in Boston, the church that became my spiritual home and launching pad for my ministry. Coming out as a lesbian was a life-changing epiphany for me. It was like coming home to myself for the first time. I had a way to identify myself that finally made sense. A way of fitting in, even and maybe especially at church. We all need a sense of belonging. As a child, I felt that sense of belonging in my church home, and it was painful to feel like I no longer had a church home when I came out. And it was very healing for me to discover that the first principle of Unitarian Universalism affirms the worth and dignity of every person. And that as human and as flawed as we are, we try to live into that. It meant a lot to me to feel like I was affirmed and accepted by a church community, just the way I was. Well, these days, I feel like I'm experiencing a second epiphany, a more nuanced understanding of the interplay between gender identity, biological sex, and gender expression that transcends the binary categories of woman-man, male-female, and feminine-masculine. And that deepening of my awareness and understanding of what's been called the gender revolution is just as important for people seeking a sense of affirmation and belonging as it was for me when I was coming out over 30 years ago. Gay pride has become simply pride to make room for an ever-expanding variety of identities around sexuality and gender. And I don't know if you're aware of this. I wasn't until recently, but there are now more than 50 alternative gender options on Facebook. Trying to provide people with terms that capture the radical and rapid shifts in our expression and understanding of gender. I've come to understand that identity is a double-edged sword. That on one hand, it gives us a way to make sense of who we are and how we fit into the world. And on the other hand, it's often imposed from the outside. And it can limit our ability to express our authentic selves. There are associated with labels, period. All labels. When I was coming out in the 80s, for example, there were only two kinds of lesbians. There was butch, women who adopted more masculine identities and roles, and femme, women who adopted more feminine identities and roles, right? And to be honest, I didn't fit neatly into either one of those boxes. But I was attracted to women, and the lesbian community was a place to call home in the straight world, where I felt totally like a fish out of water. And so I chose to label myself a lesbian, and I still do. It's the same with gender, I think. But gender has been used to put people in boxes for probably as long as there have been people. And boxes. I heard that. Thank you, Lynn. That serve a purpose. They tend to give men and male gender roles dominance over women. When asked what she considered the most pressing gender issue today, again, Gloria Steinem replied, "I suppose getting rid of the idea of gender altogether. You know, living in India was a revelation because I came to understand that there were old languages that didn't have gender. Can you imagine? That didn't have he or she. The more polarized the gender roles, the more violent the society. The less polarized the gender roles, the more peaceful the society. We are each unique and individual human beings. We are linked. We are not ranked. The idea of race and the idea of gender are divisive." End quote. Not only are boxes like gender and race divisive, they are also simplistic social constructions. And there are a lot of people who simply don't fit into the boxes. In the National Geographic documentary called The Gender Revolution, which was produced in tandem, I don't know how many of you have seen this edition of National Geographic. It's amazing. I learned so much from both the documentary and from reading through this copy of National Geographic, and I understand they're coming out with an equivalent on race very shortly, so that'll be something worth looking out for too. But in the documentary, we're introduced to a set of twins that are both born male. And for Ronnie, one of the twins, princess dress-up was a phase, but for the other twin, Ellie, at age 4, told her parents that she was a girl in her heart and in her brain, that she was a girl. And I find this kind of thing amazing. We're hearing more and more about young children who are saying, or who are letting their parents know who they are from a very young age, and it doesn't conform to the biological sex that they were born with. When children are allowed to express themselves naturally, we're learning that gender expression is so much more complicated than the anatomy that we're born with, and that when children are allowed to express themselves freely, they don't often fit into those boxes that they're born into. Comedian Sam Killerman uses this gingerbread person to illustrate the gender expression as a recipe of sorts of our gender identity, how we think about ourselves, who we're attracted to, how we feel and who we choose to love, and our anatomy, our biological sex. Terms used to define gender identity include, but aren't limited to, woman, man, two-spirit, trans, genderqueer, and genderless. Terms to define attraction include, but aren't limited to, straight, gay, pansexual, asexual, bisexual. Terms that define biological sex include male, female, and intersex. And terms that define gender expression include cisgender, androgynous, and gender neutral. Now, I have to admit that I heard the term cisgender used by a colleague at a minister's retreat just 2 years ago for the very first time. It was new to me. And how many of you are familiar with this term, cisgender? Most of you, that's great. You're at least on par with me, and that's really good to know. A cisgender person is born one sex, but who also identifies with the gender associated with that sex. It's a way to let people know that a person is exploring gender issues, affirming the multitude of ways human beings can express their gender identity, and advocating for those whose gender identity or expression is nonconforming. Identifying as cisgender is a way to acknowledge everyone's place in the gender continuum. Or I should say in that complicated recipe of all the different things that go to make up our gender identity. I'm not so sure how I would identify myself these days. This revolution is provoking at least as many questions for me as answers. Primarily, how do we separate what's innate, what's authentic, from what we learn from the culture around us? We are immersed in gender and sex role stereotypes from the time we're born, if not before. How much of what we express in terms of gender is an acceptance or rejection of what is, rather than a genuine creative expression of the authentic self? How do we balance the need to fit in, the need to find a place to call home, with our need to belong, with our expression of an authentic self? The terms that really speak to me are gender nonconforming, gender queer, and non-binary, because they basically mean I don't fit in any box. There's no label that captures who I am. They reject the notion of labels altogether, suggesting identity transcends a fixed set of characteristics, even as that terminology evolves. These terms suggest that what we are is based more on our story, our experience, and our relationships with one another than it is on boxes or labels. Putting ourselves and each other in boxes can cause so much suffering. A poem written by St. Jonah Jude reads in part, "Hear, hear, genderqueer. No one wrote a book on how to queer up the world. I've been waiting for volume one on how to hate your body effectively, because all of the brats who spit in my cherry eyes won't tell me what I'm doing wrong when I say it doesn't fit. It never fits. Will it ever fit? Because we're one binary and the other, and we don't fit quite between. And we're doomed to be melting snowflakes in schoolyards. We're doomed to tears and standing awkwardly between boy and girl sections. They opened up their doors to us, those who fit comfortably and not so comfortably in either of the two slots. Like maybe this is a game show and I didn't pick the right door. But they promptly threw us out when we tried, and tried again and failed and cried and threw our hands in the air like children, misguided, in pain, stubbing our toes on the door that says real suffering." I think it's surprising how many people could probably relate to this poem in one way or another. In reality, I'm pretty sure that none of us fit neatly or comfortably into boxes, and that we've all had the experience of having to contort ourselves in one way or another to conform. One of my favorite songs is called "When I Was a Boy," written by Dar Williams. It captures for me something of the continuum of gender identity and expression. And I'm not going to try to sing it, because she writes very wordy songs with very complicated melodies. But here are a couple of verses. "I was a kid that you would like, just a small boy on her bike. Riding topless, yeah, I didn't care who saw. And my neighbor came outside to say, 'Get your shirt.' I said, 'No way. It's the last time, and I'm not breaking any law.' And now I'm in a clothing store, and the sign says, 'Less is more.' More that's tight means more to see, more for them, not more for me. That can help me climb a tree in 10 seconds flat. When I was a boy, see that picture? That was me, grass-stained shirt and dusty knees. And I know things have got to change. But I'm not forgetting that I was a boy, too. And like the woods where I could creep, it's a secret I can keep, except when I'm tired, except when I'm being caught off guard. I've had a lonesome, awful day. The conversation finds its way to catching fireflies out in the backyard. And I tell the man I'm with about the other life I lived. And I say, 'Now you're Top Gun, and I have lost, and you have won. And he says, oh, no, no, can't you see when I was a girl? My mom and I, we always talked, and I picked flowers everywhere that I walked, and I could always cry. And now, even when I'm alone, I seldom do. And I have lost some kindness. But I was a girl, too. And you were just like me. And I was just like you. And that common humanity that binds all of us. But as someone who has experienced being mislabeled most of my life on various occasions because I don't fit neatly into the binary, I know what it's like to approach a women's room with trepidation, if not fear. And I've been queried more than once about being in the right bathroom during my lifetime. And I have to say that during the last couple of years, especially when I was traveling back and forth a lot between Canada and the United States, that I would actually dress differently on those trips than I might have just dressed on a normal day based on my own preferences, because I felt like I needed to pass, so to speak, because I didn't feel like in this heightened awareness and concern about bathrooms, that I really wanted to have that experience of being confronted on a highway somewhere where I was traveling by myself. And so even as recently as last year, I would make sure I put on earrings, wore pastel colors, and more feminine-looking clothing, because I was thinking about that as I dressed in the morning before I got in the car. But I am so hopeful. And I like to think that our youth are not doomed to invisibility or tears for standing between the boy and the girl sections, looking for the right door in. In fact, I'm hopeful that this gender revolution will help to liberate all of us from the boxes that have confined us for so long. And I like to think that helping to make room for all of us to be more authentic and to be accepted, celebrated, and loved for all of those wonderful possibilities that we are. In a little piece in the Friends Journal called Quakers, Restrooms, and the Learning Curve, Debbie Churchman writes about how the Friends meeting in Washington, D.C., dealt with creating more inclusive signage for their restrooms. And after wrestling with a lot of trial and error and confusion, they finally came up with this language, which they actually wound up posting underneath the symbol that they had created that nobody understood. They actually posted the verbiage under their sign, and it said, "We hope Friends understand that this is not about inviting men into the women's room or women into the men's room. It is about applying the testimony of equality to include people for whom, when asked, are you a man or are you a woman? The truthful answer is no. We mean to include people who, when confronted with two doors, each denoting the extreme end of a continuum, they merely fall someplace along, feel an all too familiar sense of confusion, shame, and exclusion. We want to try to create this place of inclusion." And I like to think that as you use, we resonate with the sentiment, and that we'll do everything in our power to create a welcoming and inclusive community for all people. This work, my friends, is never done. The answers are never finite. We're never going to totally get it. We're going to make mistakes along the way. The key is staying in relationship and asking the questions. This is a process of becoming more inclusive. And so my challenge for all of us is to stay open, stay curious, and find the places of connection that can help us grow into becoming the people and the community that we hope to be. May it be so.